as happens with series 1, 2, 3, 4 in a row. So with this, there's some persons here this evening that haven't seen part 1 and part 2 of a 3-part series. So we'll do a little review. Not a complete review, like we did yesterday evening. Upon request, I'm discussing some parts of Tattvasandarbha, which is a book written by Jiva Goswami. It's one part of a 6-part work called the Sat Sandarbhas, or the Bhagavat Sandarbha. All 6 are called Bhagavat Sandarbha. And it's a presentation by Jiva Goswami, a particular type of commentary, the Sandarbha type of commentary, in which it's topic by topic rather than verse by verse. Some history is the manuscript for the 6 Sandarbhas was generated by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. When Gopal Bhatta Goswami was very young, he was growing up as the son of the chief priest in Sri Rangam, one of the largest temples in all of India at that time and still today. And so he had access to everything that the son of a chief priest has access to. He had access to all the teachings of the Ramanuja Sampradaya or the Sri Sampradaya. He had access to all the procedures and so forth of deity worship. And, of course, he was unique in his spiritual qualification. And he especially was fortunate in that he had personal association with Lord Chaitanya daily for 4 months when he was growing up. So he was well acquainted with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's teachings. And when Lord Chaitanya left and instructed him to stay, although the little boy wanted to go with him, Gopal Bhatta, son of Venkata Bhatta, being inspired by Lord Chaitanya, he began studying Srimad Bhagavatam. And as he studied Srimad Bhagavatam, he kept very careful notes on the topics of the Bhagavatam and verses and passages of the Bhagavatam according to topic, and not just the Bhagavatam but many other writings. And you know, they didn't have computers at that time. He just had notes. But maybe you've seen people that keep very careful notes, and you know, volumes and volumes of pages and pages and pages of detailed notes. That's the kind of student that Gopal Bhatta was. And when he reached Vrindavan, one of the things he did was he gave the manuscript to Jiva Goswami with the request that he put it together in a publishable fashion on one condition, that he not mention his name. So in the initial 8 verses, the Mangalacharna verses, he very cleverly, Jiva Goswami mentions that one learned Bhatta didn't give his name, kept his promise. Because Bhatta is a title, and it's a title given to someone who's learned in the scripture. So it was Gopal Bhatta. So instead of saying Gopal Bhatta gave me the manuscript, he said one learned Bhatta, one learned fellow, gave this text to one Jivakaha. It's a diminutive ending, Jiva, he's Jiva Goswami, gave to one small Jiva, Jivakaha, with the request that he compile it into this literature, the Sandarbhas. So, in one sense, Gopal Bhatta was the author and Jiva Goswami was the editor, but he did more than just editing. He presented his learning that he received from Rupa Goswami, who is his spiritual master and his instructing guru also. The entirety of two things, the comprehensive and systematic presentation of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and simultaneously the systematic and comprehensive presentation of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, and showing that they're actually the same thing. If you remember that from our first day, and we repeat it the second day. He, Jiva Goswami, wanted to write a literature for the educated members of his time, Vaishnavas of his time. At the beginning he says, this book is not for other people. I'm warning you. If you're not interested in devoting yourself to Krishna's service, then, you know, don't read further. Fie on you. Don't read further. This is, so the, it's Krishna Bhaktas and it's a learned audience. Not just, you know, everyday people. Prabhupada wrote for everyday people. Jiva Goswami is writing for the intense scholars of his time. Far more learned than the intense so-called scholars of today. In any case, he wanted to show that Lord Chaitanya's teachings were the highest of all spiritual teachings, as anyone who is writing on behalf of a particular tradition will want to do so. They'll want to indicate that their school of learning is the highest school of learning. So it's not unfamiliar with other readers, but that was his intention. And he had a strategy. His strategy was the first part, a three-part strategy, very straightforward. First part is in the beginning section of this Tattva Sandarbha, that is that Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana or source of valid knowledge about anything, but specifically also about Krishna. So that's step number one. Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana or valid source of evidence. And the second one is what we're covering today, which is that Srimad Bhagavatam presents Lord Chaitanya's teachings, which is a challenging subject, because the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are vast and the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam are vast. So he to do this comprehensively and systematically, what he did for this section was distill down to essences what's the essence of Lord Chaitanya's teaching and what's the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam's teaching or philosophy. So if you remember, we discussed the essence of Lord Chaitanya's teaching is, where's Madhu Mangal? Is he here? He was here. Okay, he's on the altar. Okay. The essence of Lord Chaitanya's teaching is that the highest truth, the absolute truth, is a supreme person. Meaning that he has a personal existence, he has a personal abode, he has personal relationships, and we, the living entities, are his parts and parcels meant to come to the stage of loving relationship with that Supreme Person who is replete with unlimited transcendental potencies. Bhagavan. That's a long definition of Bhagavan. His teaching in one word is Bhagavan. The Absolute Truth is a Supreme Person with unlimited potencies. In his Bhagavat Sandarbha, in the second Sandarbha after this first one, Tattva Sandarbha, he presents this understanding. I like it very much. I've referred to it many times. Really simple. Without understanding that God, the Absolute Truth, has innumerable and inconceivable potencies, there's no question of understanding God. Then the converse. If one understands that God has unlimited and inconceivable potencies, then there's every chance of understanding God. But if you say, well, no, he can't have, as impersonalists say, he can't have inconceivable and innumerable potencies, because then you have two things. You have potent and potency. You can't, if you're an impersonalist, can have two things. You can only have one thing. So they neuter God. Instead of it's him, it's it. So there's no question of understanding the Absolute Truth without clearly accepting unlimited and inconceivable potencies. That's Bhagavan. That's the Bhagavan conception. So that's Lord Chaitanya's teachings. You can serve a person, and the medium is loving service, and the living entity, who is a person, serves the Supreme Person. And the medium of that is his internal potency. And then the living entity is his marginal potency. And then the living entity, the marginal potency, gets relieved from the influence of the external potency by the medium of the internal potency. Sambandha avideya prayojana. So then the next part, if that's Lord Chaitanya's teachings, where are there places, passages within Srimad Bhagavatam where the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is presented? And in this second half of the Tattva Sandarbha, he covers several of them. The 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Some of you may be familiar. You can look it up later. Starting with Canto 2, Chapter 10. The first 10-11 verses identify what are the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and then describe them. And what he does in this second half of this book, we're not doing it this evening, is he takes the 10 topics and says actually the first 9 are just embellishments or extensions of the final one, number 10. The final one, number 10, is Krishna, Bhagavan. And Bhagavan possesses everything, including the other 9, and everything else. Or the subject matter that we're discussing, realization in trance of Vyasadeva. We discussed this first day, and again briefly yesterday. Vyasadeva, in compiling the Vedas, did so in their fullness, but still felt dissatisfaction. Narada explained, the reason is you haven't sufficiently glorified the Supreme Lord and the process of serving him, so you should write one literature that does that. And to do that, you should fix your mind in samadhi. And so he did. And then this is the first of the verses that we've been discussing. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate malay. This word pranihate, Jiva Goswami means he was in samadhi. Bhakti yogena indicates that he was in pure devotion to the personality of Godhead. And amalay means that there was no tinge of material desire or interest of material enjoyment. These are qualifications of Vyas. And then the next two lines is this beginning part of his realization. Apashyat, he saw, Purusham Purnam, and this is, he covers this many times. Purusham Purnam means he saw not the Paramatma feature, he saw the Bhagavan feature. We discussed why he concludes that by referring to Sridhar Swami's commentaries of different verses and so on, very scholarly. And because Purusham Purnam means he saw Krishna, he also saw Radha and Krishna, because Krishna is not alone. We didn't discuss this, but later he says, actually he saw the whole spiritual world. Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda and Govardhan Hill and the river Jamuna and Goloka Vrindavan and all the cows and cowherd boys, the whole thing, because Krishna is never alone. Purnam, Purusham Purnam, in his completeness. You see, he saw Krishna in his fullness. And he also saw the external energy, Maya, under his full control, apashrayam, or taking shelter of him. So we're getting here in Vyasa's realization, aided by Jiva Goswami, Bhagavan appears. Here he is, Purusham Purnam, along with Radha, his internal potency, and his whole, the whole spiritual world. So the internal potency, the external potency, and then we ended yesterday discussing the next verse, text 5. This is also part of what he saw. Yaya sammohito jiva. He saw the living entity. And he saw how the yaya is a pronoun. It's referring to maya. That maya was bewildering the living entity. Sammohita. Thinking of himself, Atmanam, as a product of material nature, the three modes of nature. So we saw the influence of Maya upon the living entity. And he indicates that he saw the living entity as transcendental, like Krishna is transcendental. The living entity is also transcendental. But Manute, although transcendental, paropi, he thinks of himself in this material way, thinks of himself as a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Tatkritam, as a result of this, chabipadyate, he suffers. We saw the suffering condition of the living entity and why. Mistaking their transcendental self to be matter and the modes of matter determining the particular body, and bewildered by that maya. So there were just a few verses that we discussed. This is review. Yesterday. This verse, it's text 32, this parts 1, 2, and 3. So Jiva Goswami writes that this verse that begins Yaya teaches that Vyas saw a distinction between the Lord and the living entity. This indicates both the process of devotional service and the goal, that the goal is becoming free from that bewilderment. Although the living entity is by nature pure spirit, paropi, transcendental to the three inert material modes, when deluded by maya, he considers himself a product of those modes, the inert matter, material body, and then he suffers. So then we heard this, I'm not going to cover it in detail, just a little review. There are three references that he makes, two from this verse and one from a Bhagavad Gita verse, to indicate these terms. Manute, he thought, indicates the living entity is conscious. Yayasa Mohita, his full consciousness became covered by Maya. The living entity is conscious. He refers to a verse in Bhagavad Gita similarly, 15:7 Bhagavad Gita. living entity is conscious. So his point, Jiva Goswami's point, is the living entity is both conscious and consciousness. That is, like a light, a lamp, or a lamp, a candle. It gives light, but it can illuminate other things also. So simply, the soul is conscious, and it spreads consciousness, like it spreads consciousness through the body. And it can be conscious of other things. Consciousness can extend out through the senses to other objects outside the body. So the soul is both conscious and consciousness. This particular Mukunda wanted to ask about this one yesterday. His purpose is defeating Mayavad philosophy, which is something that Lord Chaitanya did too, isn't it? Because Shankaracharya, following Buddhism that dismissed the Vedas, he accepted the Vedas, particularly the four Vedas, and particularly the Upanishads and the Brahma Samhita. Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra, which is Vyasa's work. So Lord Chaitanya refuted Mayavad philosophy. The Bhagavatam is refuting Mayavad philosophy right here in this verse. Anyway. And it's Maya, not Krishna, that's responsible for the living entity being deluded. And the part where we ended up, I think, two more. Maya covers the jiva. He makes reference in the next section. There's a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam which states, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot stand in front of him being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, etc. So he refers to this term being ashamed, vilajamanaya. If we turn this other light out, I think that would help. She was ashamed. Why was she ashamed? Because she knows that Krishna wants living entities to return to him, but she's given a service. Keep them away. Although Krishna wants them to come to him. She can't tolerate they turn their backs upon Krishna, and so she does what it says here. She covers their real nature and entices them to identify with matter. Yeah? So Maya covers the jiva, and that's the third part of text 32. Now we're going to move on. That's where we ended. Now we're going to go to verse 33, where Jiva Goswami explains, Maya is to be understood as a person who has emotions like feeling ashamed. And we don't think of Maya just as this kind of impersonal energy. So this is taken from his text 33. Nor can the Lord fail to be kindly disposed towards Maya, the presiding deity of matter, his servant, since before the material creation. How's that? She was serving him before the material creation. She existed according to Srimad Bhagavatam and according to Brahma Samhita and other authorities. She's his eternal servant. She's the Chaya Devi, the reflection of his internal potency. As the Lord and his internal potency are eternal, she's co-eternal. And she's eternally in this mood of serving. Sometimes she does this particular service, sometimes she has nothing to do. But she's eternally his servant, even before creation. So if living entities become afraid of Maya, then they'll turn to the Supreme Lord. So she does things that make people afraid of her. And then he explains, someone might argue, because apparently people during his time were arguing, Maya is just an energy. And energy means the capacity to do work, which is a quality, a particular quality of something. So how can Maya feel shame if she's just an energy? And have other emotions too. He answers that it's a fact that Maya is an energy of the Lord. We hear this also from the Shruti mantras, that portion of the Vedas, that the presiding goddesses of numerous energies, they're persons. The energy have presiding goddesses. The Shaktis have presiding goddesses. And he makes reference to Kena Upanishad. What's Kena Upanishad? It's one of the principal Upanishads. And he doesn't tell the story from Kena Upanishad, but in his commentary, he does. Sarva Sambadani is the name of Jiva Goswami's commentary. And the Kena Upanishad describes like this. There was a battle between the demigods and the demons. The Supreme Lord assisted the demigods, and so they became victorious. And then he celebrated. We are victorious. We did it. We became victorious. They were thinking in false ego. So the Supreme Lord doesn't like his devotees to be in false ego. So to teach them a lesson, he appeared before or near the demigods as a yaksha. What's a yaksha? Anybody know what a yaksha is? Huh? A type of they're kind of, not exactly demon. They're kind of mystical personalities. They have mystic powers. When Dhruva Maharaj fought with the yakshas, they're worshippers of Kuvera, and they have mystic powers, and they do mystical things, and so he appeared, was a yaksha that came out of the lake in Mahabharata and questioned Yudhisthira. So the Supreme Lord appeared as a yaksha, and the demigods were looking, who's that fellow over there? So they nominated Agni. This is from Kena Upanishad. Go find out who that fellow is. And when Agni approached, he's one of the chief demigods, very, very opulent and impressive looking. And here's this yaksha, not so impressive looking. And Agni asked who he was. And the yaksha said, I'll be glad to indicate who I am, but first you indicate who you are. I am Agni, I'm the Lord of Fire. And everyone offers me respect. Now who are you? He said, well, I'll disclose this if you can burn this blade of grass that's in my hand. Then I'll disclose, you'll know. So he used all of his fiery potency and nothing happened to the blade of grass in his hand. So he went back and told the demigods, I don't know, I couldn't understand who this fellow is. So they sent Vayu. Vayu went to the yaksha, asked, who are you? And the yaksha said, I'll be glad to tell you who I am, but who are you? And I'm Vayu, the king of the wind, and all things move by my power. Even the planets in the universe move by my power. And so Yaksha said, well, I'll disclose who I am, but you see if you can move, everything moves, see if you can move this blade of grass from my hand with all the force of Vayu. Nothing happened. So we went back and informed the demigods, I don't know who that person is. I couldn't understand who he is. So they then sent Indra. And Indra, as Indra was approaching, suddenly that yaksha just vanished. He was very astonished with these prior events, and now the yaksha just vanished. And he saw up in the sky Maya, or Uma specifically as mentioned, a form of Lord Shiva's consort. And Indra asked this goddess, who are you and who was that person, that stranger that was over here? And she said, that was the personality of Godhead. But because you have become proud, you are unable to recognize him. And he wanted to correct your misunderstanding that it was because of your strength you were victorious in the battle. It was because he made you victorious, or that anybody can do anything successfully. It's on the credit of the Supreme Lord. So they became humbled, as the Supreme Lord will sometimes do when his devotee becomes proud. Krishna humbled Indra during the Govardhan Leela. Krishna humbled Brahma with the Brahmi Vimohan Leela. So the Shruti authority indicates that, yes, Maya is in fact an energy, but there are goddesses presiding over that energy. And those goddesses or Shaktis, remember, this is one of the descriptions of Bhagavan or features of Bhagavan, Nijasarva Shaktis, as all potencies. Those potencies are worshippers of the Supreme Lord. So, Maya is a person who feels emotions, not just an energy. This is Anuchhed or text 33, the second part. So that's, he goes on to text 34 after 33. Imagine that. And in text 34, there's a very long commentary, medium-sized verse, but Jiva Goswami is now taking the opportunity to show that Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Very interesting. By the way, during the time of Lord Chaitanya, the term, which we're all familiar with in ISKCON, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, that didn't exist. The term didn't exist. The philosophy existed, but Jiva Goswami gave the term, and it stuck. So here's his text, 34. Like the Lord, so this is the Abheda, like the Lord, the Jiva is purely spiritual. Yet, Beda, they're different. How are they different? The phrase is tad apashrayam, which is, you know, Maya was under his shelter, and the yaya samohita, that's Maya bewilders the jiva, shows the difference. Living entities can become bewildered. The Supreme Lord cannot become bewildered. That's a difference. But they're both pure spirit. Oneness in quality, difference in quantity. Qualitatively the same, quantitatively different. Sound familiar? So it's right within this verse. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are presented by Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what he wishes to show, and he's showing it. Text 34. Then text 35. Whoops, before that there's Baladev Vidyabhusan commentary. Who is Baladev Vidyabhusan? Anybody know who Baladev is? Well, he wasn't formally an impersonalist. He was a Madhvacharya initiate. He was a Madhvacharya. He was trained. He was born in Orissa, and he was very, very interested in spiritual teachings. He studied amazingly well as a young boy. He went, with his parents' permission, he went traveling throughout all of India to look for a spiritual master. He finally found a very wonderful temple of followers of Madhvacharya where he studied scripture under them, took initiation under them. So that's a different person you're thinking of. Baladeva Jibusan, the previous time I was here, we discussed Madhurya Kadambini. And the author of Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti. Baladeva is his disciple or student. He lived in Vrindavan, studied under Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he did many things. So he, one of the things he did was he wrote a commentary on Tattva Sandarbha. So from Baladeva's commentary, he makes several points. That the material energy seen by Vyasa was under the Lord's shelter. Quiz question. What was the Sanskrit for that? Under the Lord's shelter. Tadapashrayam, under his shelter, Tadapashrayam, indicates the Supreme Lord's control over Maya and by whom the jiva is bewildered. What was the Sanskrit for that? Yaya samohito jiva. So Maya bewilders the jiva, indicates the jiva is becoming controlled by Maya. Thus, it is self-evident that Vyasadeva saw in his trance the essential difference between Bhagavan and the jiva, supreme controller, and the tiny soul. And he quotes, Baladeva quotes about five different scriptural references. One of them is this one, which Prabhupada again and again quoted, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, etc. Very important. So it's again, there's the Supreme One, Eternal, and there's many plural Eternals. The Supreme Conscious Being, the plural so many conscious beings. There's the One, Krishna, and there's the many, the living entities, who are being, whose needs or desires are being facilitated by the One. The One maintains the many. So the distinction, as is indicated here. So that's the difference. And then, there's the oneness. So, those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita introduction, oh, Bhagavad Gita scholars, you know that there's five topics mentioned in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Four of them are eternal. Here they are listed. One of them is temporary. One that's temporary is karma. So Baladeva says that in these verses, Vyas is seeing all four of these eternal features. So far, we're only down a verse and a half. Ishvara, jiva, living entity, maya, and time. So within his commentary, it's not detailed here, but the fact that there's events taking place, like the bewilderment of the living entity, for example, is an event. Time is needed. Time is present. He saw time. Then he indicates that all four of these, which are eternal, in fact, they exist eternally before the creation even manifests. They're all four are within the transcendental body of Mahavishnu or Karna Dakshai Vishnu, but they're also present in material creation in order to make creation happen. And amongst them, two of them, The Supreme is the infinite living being, and the jivas are the infinitesimal living beings. Both are conscious. So this is the sameness, and this is the difference. Are you with me? He's commenting on Jiva Goswami's statement that Lord Chaitanya's Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy is found right within these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Bhagavatam is teaching Mahaprabhu's philosophy. So here's the oneness part. Excuse me. Here's the difference part. Here's the oneness part. Both the Ishvara, the supreme controller, and the living entities, they're conscious and eternal. That's the oneness part. That's the difference part. And then he covers the other two. Inert matter, maya, has qualities, as three modes of material nature. Time doesn't have those qualities, but it produces the perception of change. Time moves things. Without time, you don't have material events. It produces the perception of change, past, present, and future. That's Baladev's commentary on text 34. I hope I haven't lost all of you yet. Philosophy. We like stories better than philosophy. The Kena Upanishad story was nice, wasn't it? Okay, so now this is the next verse, text 35, which he now is going into. I spelled it wrong. There's an H after the D. The bhakti is the abhideya, is logically inferred. Here's how he builds his logical case. God is the foundation of maya, and the living entity is bewildered by maya, proves that God is and the jivas are distinct. That's simple. So then, logically, the worship of God is the only advisable practice, or abhideya, spelled correctly, based on the reasoning of verses such as Bhagavad Gita 7:14, Daivihi Esha Gunamayi, Mama Maya Duratyaya. Then this part, only those who have surrendered unto me, Mam Eva Papadyante. So this is the process, surrendering or devotional service, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, worship of Bhagavan is the process being indicated or inferred. And it's directly stated in the very next verse. Inference is superseded by the direct statement, the linking process. And that was 44. So now this is 45. Now, prayojana. Somebody, we asked yesterday the meaning of these two terms. Abhideya is the process of linking with the Supreme. Prayojana is the mature fruit, or the goal of that linking process. Love of God is that goal. So he writes, because the Personality of Godhead gives spiritual instructions for everyone's benefit, because he removes everyone's unhappiness, because as the sun is to its rays, he is the supreme self of all jivas, and because he possesses all super excellent qualities, he is supremely deserving of love. This is the understanding of prayojana. Text 45. Okay, so this is the third of those verses. We started with text 4, then text 5, and unpacked them a bit. Now here's text 6, and we're done for the evening. Let's chant the verse together. Anartho pasamam sakshad bhakti yogam adhoksa jay lokasya janato vidvangs Chakre Sattvata Samhitam. So within this verse, again, the bhakti yoga, the linking process, with who's that? Adhoksaja? What's the meaning of Adhoksaja? One who's beyond the senses. Very interesting. We use our senses to serve he who is beyond the senses. Does that make sense? Because the senses are from him also. So the limit of our material senses is we cannot perceive him with our material senses. But so this anartha, this unwanted misery that was described in the previous verse is mitigated or finished. And because lokasya, people in general, vidvams, they don't know this, he chakre sattvata samhita, he compiled this literature, Vyas. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So that's beginning of 46. We're just going to cover the rest of Anuchet 46. So he makes the point in this next section that this removal of anarthas takes place during the sadhana stage or the practicing stage. And his logic, you'll see, is because in the practicing stage one requires instructions. That's this. People didn't have this knowledge, so he compiled the Vedas. They needed the instruction. So he provided the instruction. That's the sadhana stage. Whereas in the prema stage, one isn't reliant upon those instructions, one is reliant simply upon descending mercy of Krishna. So he writes, Vyasadeva similarly envisioned the process, Abhideya, and presented, quote, the Shruti text for the pure Vaishnavas, like, you know, the pinnacle, the best of Vaishnava literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, to engage people in that method of devotional service, as confirmed in the verse beginning Anartha, the verse that we just recited together, text number 6. And he goes on, in that verse, the word bhakti yoga refers to sadhana bhakti, devotional service and practice, marked by the processes of hearing, chanting, and so on, rather than prema bhakti, devotional service, and pure love of God. Why? Practice or sadhana bhakti, one needs instruction. But for pure love, one only needs the Lord's special mercy. And he goes on. So this is, anartha removal takes place in the sadhana stage. If you remember from Adurya Kandamani, Rupa Goswami says the same thing. And Vishwanath says this. Even in the sadhana stage, kleshagni, this eradication of miseries or sufferings, takes place. Even in the sadhana stage. And, very nice point, when sadhana bhakti matures, because in the pure love stage, prema bhakti stage, one needs only the Lord's special mercy, but that sadhana invites the Lord's special mercy. Nonetheless, sadhana bhakti is the cause for gaining the Lord's mercy and is the womb from which the fruit of pure love for him is born. Thus, bhakti, independent of anything else, directly eradicates all material contamination. So he's making this declaration And immediately following that, he makes his scriptural references that support his declarations. These verses are from Uddhava Gita. It's a very important chapter, actually. The whole chapter is about devotional service. So in that description of devotional service, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. He says, these lesser attainments are automatically achieved by bhakti process. Is that right? Do you know of some other teaching, Lord Chaitanya's teaching that says this? Again, Lord Chaitanya's teaching is being expressed by the Bhagavatam. That's the theme of the Sandarbhas. What is one of those teachings? Well, what's the teaching that Lord Chaitanya gives about faith? What's his definition of what is faith? Shraddha Shabde Vishvas Kahe Sudridha Nishchaya. Faith is confidence that if you achieve one specific thing, all other desirable things will be accomplished or fulfilled. For a miser, get money. Because if you can get money, you can buy happiness. So get money. That's their faith. Just very singularly focused. Get money. So, for the teaching of the Bhagavatam, Krishna Bhakti. Just achieve that. Krishna Bhakti. And all other desirable things will be fulfilled. Whatever can be achieved by these lesser things, it's included within bhakti. Or, Prabhupada would help Western people to understand, if you have $1 million, you can take care of your $10 and $100 problems. Yes? Unless you're really a fool. So, by achieving Krishna Bhakti, all other lesser things. Bhakti is independent, the others are dependent. And then this other verse, all of this is easily achieved by my devotee through loving devotional service to me, even if he desires promotion to heaven. Krishna can award that very easily. Now devotees are not so likely to want to achieve heaven because therein repeated birth and take place, death take place, they read Bhagavad Gita, and so they're following Krishna's instructions. Or he gives an alternative reading that this devotional service in practice or sadhana bhakti cures without delay the general contamination of material suffering, and only pure love of God, the fruit of such practice, cures one's more basic bewilderment and misidentification. So like, you know, the pure devotional service can destroy false ego. It can dissolve false ego, misidentification, and the bewilderment that goes with it. Besides, you know, besides having a headache, and you can take a tablet to relieve your headache, but what's causing the headache? What's the malady within the body that's causing the ache or the pain? And, you know, good medicine can relieve the cause of the ache and pain, not just the pain. Pure devotional service has that capacity. Thus, here, what should be done? Abhideya is indicated in this text just as it was presented in earlier texts. Text 42, 46.2. And that's where we end for this evening. Now there is another verse. That's obviously it follows the previous one. where the glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam is presented. When one gives oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service for Lord Krishna sprouts. So it's the benefit of hearing. Bhaya paha. Fearfulness is extinguished. Shoka, moha, and bhaya are just extinguished. But back to this one, text number 6. So you have a question already. I didn't even finish. Go ahead.
So Maharaj, Achintya Veda Abhida is inconceivable. But from a bhakti perspective, the difference part makes a lot of sense. As Prabhupada says, God is great, you are not, hence you worship the great. But would you be able to shed some light on the oneness aspect of the equation?
Well, there's practical and there's philosophical. On the practical side, everything that exists has a source of emanation. And there's not two different competing sources of emanation. There's one. So the oneness has to do with the fact that everything emanates from the same source. Different energies, different expansions, whatever there is that exists, emanates from that one source. Prabhupada said it like this. The spiritual reality is there's two things. There's God, and there's gods, that which comes from Him, and there's not a third thing. So the oneness is, He is the source of everything. Now philosophically, aside from, you know, if there was something that didn't come from that one source, then there'd be at least potentially two competitors for the post of God. If there was something that existed apart from Krishna, whatever that might be. Radhika Raman used the example of Krishna's dhoti. So if Krishna's dhoti was not one with Krishna, then that meant, that could mean maybe the dhoti, at least possibly, could be God. Then you have, you know, the possibility of a competitor supreme. Huh? Yeah. Same. Okay, so there must be simultaneously, or as one says one statement, the oneness with and difference from. Something else? So the Sandarbhas are philosophy. If you don't like philosophy, you probably could, you know, just skip this class and go read Krishna book or something. But the Jiva Goswami is establishing specifically that the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are within Srimad Bhagavatam. They're not separate. Anything else? Yeah? Oh, okay.
Hare Krishna. I was wondering if you could explain the difference between Achintya Veda Veda and the Dvaita Dvaita philosophy of, I don't know what Sampradaya, but the it's like without the Achintya.
You know, it's been quite a while, so I probably wouldn't get it right. So I'm not going to try. But I can spend a little bit of time this evening to make sure, because I have an idea, but I'm not sure. So I'll check, and when we have morning class, ask, you're going to be here for the morning class tomorrow? Ask the question tomorrow. And as long as I get a little time this evening, then I'll research that. Jai Jagannath, off the top of your head, do you want to say something on this topic? There's a devotee named Purushottraya Swami who's Brazilian, and he stayed in Vrindavan and studied for 1 year this topic of the teachings of the four sampradayas, exactly what they are, and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and how they're distinct from Lord Chaitanya's teachings. And then he gave a course on it, and he wrote a little book on it. So it's you can say something in 30 seconds that maybe not exactly right. Better to, it's a deep subject. You know, there's a book, I know where to look. Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a book on the integration, the similarities, and some of the dissimilarities of the four sampradayas. And I believe it's presented there. That would be a good reference. And I believe I have the book. Although I might have it in New York. Let's see. I think I'll find it. Yes.
This just struck me now. But you've made this point multiple times, that Jiva Goswami's effort was to show that Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But my question is, or my clarification is this, is that what his intent was for the devotees? Because my understanding was that his intent for the non-devotee crowd was to show the Gaudiya Vaishnav take on the Vedanta philosophy. Like, for example, when the Vedanta Sutras say Atato Brahma Jikyasa, then what do the Gaudiyas mean when the word Brahman shows up in that sutra? Or are those two the same things?
I don't understand at all what you're asking. Do you understand what he's asking? You want to try again?
Yeah. So
be really clear with your question so I can respond.
So you've repeatedly pointed out that Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that was one of Jiva Goswami's main attempts. The conception I was under was that his main attempt was to show the Gaudiya Vaishnav take on the Vedanta Sutra. This is our commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So,
it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Vyasa's commentary on Brahma Sutra. Or Vedanta Sutra. It's not intended to be a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So everything that's in Vedanta Sutra is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's expanding and indicating in a systematic and comprehensive way the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, but he has a goal. Within the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the highest evidence, Lord Chaitanya's teachings are there. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya's teachings are the highest. You know, he's expert. With one thing, he's doing more than one thing. Okay. Yes.
The last sentence over there, thus here what should be done, Abhideya, is indicated as it was before. Can you explain what it means? Or do we have
to read? Well, sure. He's building a case. He's like a lawyer citing, you know, case law and drawing his conclusions from case law, therefore my case is now proved. Like that. So he makes a statement that the previous is it's sadhana bhakti that removes anarthas, and then he's saying, but sadhana bhakti properly performed gives rise to prema bhakti. So bhakti produces bhakti, same as the Madhurya Kandambini message, and bhakti doesn't depend on anything else, rather it's the other way around. Other things depend on bhakti. Bhakti is not dependent, it's independent. That's this part. Or, alternatively, bhakti cures our suffering, which then, when done properly, sadhana bhakti results in pure love of God, which is the fruit of sadhana bhakti, and the more fundamental condition than just like getting rid of suffering is our our immersion in matter is finished. So therefore, or thus, the process of devotional service, sadhana bhakti in its mature stage, prema bhakti, this is what we should be doing. This is our process to be followed as being taught in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's teaching us that. Narto Pashamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madhoksaje. It's speaking of the sadhana stage, but it leads to the prema stage, and the prema stage is the ultimate objective, and therefore we should be engaged in devotional service, that process.
What does the term abhidhaya mean? Abhidhaya.
Process. Process.
Process.
Process. It means, you know, another way of saying is acting in one's relationship with the Supreme. Sambandha? Relationship. Was the relationship of all things with their source of emanation, that's sambandha gyan or sambandha tattva. Once you understand what the relationship of all things with the source is, then you can act in relation to the source. That's abhideya. The process of acting in one's relationship with the Supreme Source of everything.
So when it says as it was before, means that was how it was original?
Yeah. Okay. Our relationship with Krishna becomes restored.
How it was before.
Yeah. The spark that left the fire is placed back in the fire, so all the illuminating potential of that little spark becomes fully manifested again. But where'd the spark come from? It came from the fire. Bring it back in the vicinity of the fire, or in the fire, the fullness of its glowing capacity is manifest. Fullness of consciousness becomes manifest in the prema bhakti state. So prema bhakti is the goal, or prema is the goal, and the means to reach the goal is bhakti. Okay? Are we done? Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I actually had a follow-up question on my question from yesterday.
Okay. I remember the question from yesterday.
Particularly, Carlos Prabhu. After my question, he inquired about, well, do you need to be a scholar in order to be a devotee, or to achieve the goals of devotional service? Which is a clear no. And, what it brought up in my mind is this sort of almost antagonism I see sometimes was spoken of when it comes to the word scholarship, and how we kind of conceive of the word scholarship is usually disparaged more than it's glorified. But we see that all of our acharyas were scholars.
Oh, that's the status of the Uttama Adhikari.
Right. And so, and then the example was given of the South Indian Brahmin, the famous story.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I often get bewildered by this example because he was crying just to think that Krishna was a chariot driver of Arjuna.
His devotee,
Yeah, and in tears. So that seems like a perfected state of Krishna consciousness, clearly, like bhav bhakti. And so it doesn't always seem like a relevant example in describing how we should.
Oh, it's not an example of how we should.
Right. So then it seems that although clearly all of us can be scholars because of the age of Kali and so on, but someone's got to be a scholar. Like someone's got to really know what it really is, and then the rest of us have to be hearing from that someone or someone's. And I was thinking of Varnashram terms also, how the Brahmanas, they were the persons who studied and knew all the things. And then it was their responsibility to just teach everyone else. So I was kind of wanting to kind of maybe hear more or get a perspective on how we see this word scholarship.
Oh, well, I was thinking that after I answered his question the way that I answered it. You know, that is to say, you know, it's easy to say, no, it's not necessary because it's not necessary. But, you know, what I did say was the real scholar is one who understands Krishna's position. And the only way to really understand Krishna's position is through unalloyed devotion. And if unalloyed devotion is all that's required, you know, I said, does that mean we're wasting our time? No, I didn't mean that. But, you know, it's, the connotation is, it's not necessary, so why waste your time? And those people that do it, you know, poor guys. They're wasting their time. Yeah, so, what I did say was that it's nourishing, it's impetuses for surrender more deeply, rather than, you know, the misery of some calamity causes one to surrender more deeply. But then the misery of the calamity subsides and one's submission slackens. So what's going to support out of the four types of pious people that render service unto Krishna, the best is one who is situated in knowledge. But it's not, you know, the pedantic scholar model, but someone who is in fact eager to hear the glories of Krishna. That's what this is the glories of Krishna and the process of serving him. And then one doesn't waver this unsteadiness, anishtita bhakti that we heard about in Madhurya Kandamani. It subsides, the unsteadiness subsides when one factually understands Krishna's position. Bhuhunam janmanam ante ganavanmam prapadyate. What's the precipitates or invokes that surrender? Vasudev sarvamiti. That's this oneness. Krishna is everything. Aham eva sameva agre, the first of the chatur sloki verses. In his Bhagavat Sandarbha, coming attractions, Jiva Goswami says, in this one word, aham, everything is there. Krishna is there, Radharani is there, the associates of Krishna are there, the cows are there, because everything is there. So now, scholarship isn't going to understand that. Bhakti is going to understand that. But hearing that, then when we hear aham eva sameva, then we know what is being said. Then there's an impetus for ecstatic love rather than the other kind of dry, speculative type of scholarship. It's descending knowledge type of receiving from Krishna to Lord Brahma the Bhagavatam in that one word, aham. Just like the term ahankara, close the window. Okay. Yeah, ahankar. I'm just thinking, kara. Kara in Sanskrit means what? Sound, isn't it? Huh? You don't know. I forget. One, yeah, so it's, anyway, I forget, so I won't carry it further. One's false ego is diminished and then eventually dismissed by understanding who is actually aham. He's entitled to say that because he's eternally aham. He's everything. We falsely use that aham, and so that becomes ahankara. It's like acting in false ego or that kind of understanding. It's our illusory existence. So, scholarship, back to your question, scholarship is understanding not just sentimentally, but factually, he alone exists. It's he is everything. And one who understands he is everything, iti matva bhajante mam, not just because the guy next to me is doing it, or my mother and grandmother did it, or, you know, it feels good, and then when it doesn't feel good, then I don't do it anymore. It doesn't matter, you know, the circumstantial configurations of matter. Bhakti arises from the desire to serve Krishna. And why do we want to serve Krishna? Because he's everything. He is the source of everything, and he is everything. He's our be-all and end-all. So that kind of understanding, deeply received, that's Krishna conscious scholarship, and, you know, the illiterate Brahmin understood it. So somebody is the chariot driver of another somebody, what's the big deal? Why are you crying about that? Because he's everything. So he... Yes. From? Okay. This is an online question? Okay.
You gave a detailed explanation of references from Srimad Bhagavatam describing the essence. What is the reference of Lord Chaitanya's teachings? Is it Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Well, when he spoke with, for example, when he spoke with Prakashananda Saraswati, he explained Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So the essence of it is the absolute truth is a person. One can read over that section and understand, because in a short series of verses he presents Vedanta Sutra. What's the Sambandha is the source of emanation of all things, and then acting in that relationship, and then the goal. Or it's in a similar way he gave same explanation to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But it's Krishna is a person, we're meant to serve him. And that person, that Bhagavan person, has unlimited potencies. And with his various potencies, he does everything through his potencies. Okay. Srila Prabhupada.